Morning, everybody. It's good to see people. Chanukah Sameach, Chodesh Tov, Chodesh Tevet. We'll talk a little bit more about Chodesh Tevet as we get through today's shiur. It's also, of course, now Lahavdil in the English year is 2025, which seems like it's been a pretty quick 25 years. But that's, I suppose, how it goes. We will actually be relating today to the issue of New Year, the secular New Year, as a very central issue and connections with Hanukkah, etc. And next week, we will be turning our attention to Inyana de Yoma of Asara B'Tevet, which is coming up next Friday, something we've never spoken about in this forum before, but there are all sorts of very interesting connections connected with also the translation of the Torah into Greek. Which, of course, is not unrelated to Hanukkah. People don't always make the connection between Hanukkah and the Greek focus. And then just a few days later, Asara B'Tevet and Chet Tevet is, and we'll talk about that next week, which is the Septuagint and how that works. And there's a kind of Chol HaMoed in between, these days between Hanukkah and Chet Tet and Yud Tevet. We'll talk about that next week. Very interesting stuff. But for now, we are looking at something a little bit different to what we normally talk about, which I've called here Solstice Surprises, Christmas, the 9th of Tevet, and Nittl Nacht. Now, for those of you who think you already missed Nittl Nacht, then you might not have. It's coming up again next week. We'll see how that works. But let's have a look first at number one. Because Hanukkah, as you know, is an eight-day midwinter festival, celebration, and the Gemara already roots its origins in a pagan creation story. Let's see how that works. Number one, says the Mishnah, the elu eideihim shel oivdei kochavim. Now the Mishnah is concerned about the halachic prohibition of trading with pagans in the immediate run-up to their pagan festivals, because we do not want them to go to their gods and say, oh, Baruch Hashem, or whatever the equivalent is that they say, I did a great deal, these Jews have helped me, I've got now money for my... We don't want them to be thanking their gods. Alternatively, maybe even worse, we don't want to give them the sacrifices, the sheep, or whatever they're going to use to actually do the Avodah Zarah with their gods. So the rabbis made a fence, if you like. You're not allowed to trade with these pagans 3 days before their festivals. So we need to know, what are their festivals? I need to know which days to avoid. So here are their festivals. Calendar. So calendar, of course, is the English word calendar, comes from calendar. Calendar was the Roman name for the first day of the month. Okay, so the first day of the month, Rosh Chodesh, as it were, for them. There's a calendar. And there's a Saturna. What's Saturna? So Saturna may be a kind of a derogatory name, Satanura, meaning the light has gone away, the light is on the side, for what the Romans used to call Saturnalia. Saturnalia was celebrated exactly now this time of the year, and it was linked to the solstice. Obviously, the winter solstice has just passed, the idea that the days are beginning to slightly lighten once again, and the Romans had a major festival at this time of the year. I've listed at the bottom how it was described by people at the time, a number of days accompanied by drinking, buffoonery, sexual license, cross-dressing, singing naked in the streets, giving gifts, and the general relaxing of legal rules. So not that much different to what we now experience as Christmas and New Year festivals. And you can see these have very, very ancient roots. The idea that people are giving gifts to each other, people are behaving badly, all sorts of things that they wouldn't normally do, they get up to. This was part of the Saturnalia celebrations. And then it says, V'yom ginusia shel malcheihem. The day of ginusia. Ginusia is linked to the Latin word genus or genus, meaning the creation of their kings. We'll see what that is in a minute. V'yom haleida, and the birth date of their kings, the king's birthday, as we see with Paro, celebrates Paro's birthday. There are no other birthdays, as far as I'm aware, in Tanakh. Maybe birthdays were a non-Jewish focus on the celebration. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chanan bar Rava, what are these things? Calendar. So calendar, it says, is Chet Yamim Achar Tchufa. They had a special Kalends festival, which is 8 days, note the 8 days, of the 8-day festival after the winter solstice, so to the end of December. Saturna, and Saturna is Chet Yamim Lifnei Tkufa, an eight-day festival before the winter solstice, in the run-up to the solstice. V'simanech, and the hint to this is in Tehillim, where it says, Achor v'kedem tzartani, you have afflicted me, you have blocked me in before and after, meaning there are two problematic festivals, this whole period is a problem. Lefi Shera Adam Arishan, and now the Gemara goes back to Adam. Adam Arishan saw Yom Shemit Ma'et V'holech. He saw the days getting smaller, shorter and shorter and shorter. The Amar, and he said, Oili, this is terrible. Shema bishvil shesarachti, because I went off, I ate from the fruit, I ate from the Gan Eden Gaiden. Olam chashoch badi, the world is getting darker and darker because of me. V'chozeh letov avo, and it's all going back into complete chaos because of what I did. V'zohi misa shekansa alai min hashamayim. And when they said that if you eat from this fruit, you will die, this is it. Everything is descending into darkness, and in the end, everything will cease to be. Amad v'yashav ches yamin betanis. So he had an eight-day festival that Adam Arishan was experiencing in the darkening of the days. Betanit ubetvila. Some of the gisaot add an eight-day festival, a special prayer that he shouldn't come to an end in darkness. Kevan shirat tkufat tevid, as they crossed over the tkufat tevid, the winter solstice. V'ra'a yom shema'arich v'holech, and he saw, the days are beginning to get longer again. Amar, he said, min ha'gashal oylam hu. This is actually, obviously, the way that the world works. It's not because of me. Halach v'asa shmona yavim tovim, and he made a second eight-day festival after the solstice as a festival of celebration of thanksgiving. Now, it's very interesting. You can already see the parallels why the Gemara is bringing this story, this time of year, an eight-day festival before, an eight-day festival afterwards, and it links them with this Roman calendar and Saturna. And then it says, L'shana acheret. Note these words, we talked about Yamim Tovim. L'shana acheret. The very next year, As'an le'elu le'elu Yamim Tovim. They made a decree, Adam Arishan, back at the very beginning, that both of these eight-day festivals should be special festivals. V'hu kav'am l'shem shemayim. He fixed them, note this lashon of kavua, likboa, he fixed them as a praise to God, v'dheim kav'um l'shem avodat kachavim. But the pagans later took these festivals and they turned them into pagan festivals. Okay. That says the Gemara is the origins of the midwinter festivals that go on at this time of year. Now, just compare that with the famous quote from number two, from My Hanukkah in Shabbos, which is quoting from Megillat Ta'anit. Now, we will have a slightly confusing, but hopefully we won't be confused. There are two things called Megillat Ta'anit. The famous one, which we're quoting from here, is the second temple list of special feast days, which were instituted because of victories over the non-Jews, the Romans, the Greeks, etc., etc. And Megillat Ta'anit was a list of all the days that you were not allowed to fast on. It's a little bit misleading, the name. It's not a scroll of fasts. It's a scroll of days that you're not allowed to fast on. That was the second temple book. And when the Churban happened, all of these festivals were cancelled apart from Hanukkah and Purim. Okay, so now look at the Hanukkah part. Number two, my Hanukkah, says the Gemara, what's Hanukkah? The Tanur Rabbanim, we have this braisa. The Chavchei v'Kislev Yomi the Hanukkah Tamni and Inhu. Again, quoting from Megillat Ta'anit. The 8 days from the 25th of Kislev, there are 8 days of Hanukkah. Fine. The Loila Misped, you're not allowed to give Hesfedin Bahan on these days. Ud Loila Ta'li Tanois Bahan, and you're not allowed to fast on these days. Because when the Greeks went into, when the Greeks went into the temple, Timu Kalashmanim Shebeheichel, they made impure, they desecrated all of the oil. Again, they weren't trying to destroy the temple, they were just trying to make it tame, so we couldn't use it for ritual connection with Hashem. Ukeshegavra Malchut Beish Chashmonai v'Nitzchum, when the Chashmonaim won over them, Badku, they checked for oil, v'loy matzu elapach echad shel shemen. They found one jar of oil, shehayamurich v'chos meshal Kohen Gadol, which still had the hechsher, the stempel of the Kohen Gadol on it. V'loy hayibo elelahad liklom echad, there was only 1 day's worth of oil, and there's the cottage industry of working out why Hanukkah is 8 days, not 7 days, because they had enough oil for 1 day, so the only miracle was only 7 days, not for now. Naseb ones, there was a nes that occurred, v'hidliku mimenu, they used that 1 day of oil, shmona yamim, for 8 days, and then l'shana acheret, exactly the same language that we saw in number one, the next year, kav'um, they fixed it, again the same language, v'asum yamim tovim, b'halel v'hodah. So there seems no question that there is a link between these two ideas. The Avodah Zarah idea that was a corruption of Adam Arishon's original recognition of the light and the dark. And then Hanukkah, which came much later, which was, if you like, imposed onto that time of year because of the miracle that we experienced with the Greeks. Okay, fine. So there already we see a connection between the non-Jewish holidays and Lahavdil later, the Hanukkah holidays as they come at this time of year. Fine, let's go on, because there's much more, there's a lot further to go. Number three. So says the Gemara, what are these, some of these holidays we identified, calendar and Saturnalia, but number three, Yom Ginusia Shel Malcheihem. What is the Yom Ginusia? Says the Gemara, Ma Yom Ginusia Shel Malcheihem. What is that? Amar Rav Yehuda, Yom Shema'amidim Boi Ovdi Kachavim Et Malkam. It's the day that they crowned their king. It's the anniversary of the coronation. So you remember the coronation. So every year on the date of the coronation, so they make a special festival. Second line. The Hatanya, isn't there a brisa that says opposite? Yom Ginusia V'Yom Shema'amidim Boi Et Malkam. There's a list that includes them as separate days. There's the Yom Ginusia, which is one festival for the Romans, and there's the Yom, which is the anniversary of the coronation. So they can't be the same day. They're listed as two separate things. So that can't be what the Yom Ginusia is. Says the Gemara, Lo Kasha, no problem. Hadidei, one is the coronation of the king himself. That's the that is the Yom Ginusia. And the other one is not. V'chad debrei, and the other one is his son. When the young prince is confirmed as being the crown prince, that is a day of celebration, and therefore they have these 2 days, the day of the king and the day of the crown prince. Fine. Says the Gemara now, and this is key for us. Umi mag mi malka bar malka? But 1 second, do the Romans have a crown prince? They don't have a hereditary monarchy. Certainly by the time the Chazal were dealing here with the Romans, there was an empire, and the emperor, the next emperor was very, very rarely the son of the previous emperor. On the contrary, there was usually a political coup, and the next emperor was whoever took over, killed the last guy, and the Senate would confirm the next emperor. So what are you telling me? It's the hereditary monarchy. That's not how it worked. That can't be what it means. V'atani Rav Yosef, and it says about the Romans, and here's a very interesting quote from Sefer Ovadia. Sefer Ovadia, of course, was written about Esav. Ovadia himself was from, originally Ge'er from Esav. The Hine Katon Netatich Bagoyim. I have made you Edom, which Chazal associate Edom with Rome. I have made you the smallest of nations. What does that mean? Says the Gemara. She'ein Moshivi Melech Ben Melech. That they have no continuity. They have no hereditary royal family. They are a small nation. And here's the key for us. Bazui Ata Ma'od. You are extremely disgraced. What does that phrase mean? Says the Gemara. She'ein lehem loy ktav v'loy lashon. They have no writing and they have no language. The Romans have no writing and they have no language. What does that mean? So Rashi says, number 4, ktav v'lashon shel Roma'im. The language and the script and the language of the Romans, me'uma acheret ba'alahem. It came from a completely different nation. Acherem tiknu lachem kol sifrehem. And other people established for them all of their books. Other people gave them a script. Other people gave them their books. Sorry, that's going a little bit wrong. I won't touch it too much. What does that mean? I mean, the Latin script was formulated by the Romans. Okay, it was based on the Greek alphabet to a significant degree. And alpha became A and beta became B. Is that what they're saying? That the Roman alphabet is not original? That it comes from Greek? Okay, I mean, there are some letters that come originally within Latin. But that they wrote no books? What do you mean they wrote no books? Think of Ovid and Cicero and Juvenal and Pliny and Virgil. They had an entire Latin literature. What do you mean they wrote no book? Other people wrote their books? Other people didn't write their books. Yeah.
I learned classics in college, and the whole Latin culture was based on the Greeks.
Ah, so you want to say that they wrote books, but they were derivative. Their culture was derivative. They just adopted, right, which is very true. They adopted the innovations of Greek culture, and they, if you like, moved them into where they put, not plagiarized them, but they, you know, piggybacked on them and formed a Roman culture. But it's strange to say that the other people wrote their books. Now, it is true that Greek was actually the language that the Romans mostly spoke in. Even Julius Caesar when he was stabbed in the forum or wherever he was stabbed, he didn't say et tu, Brute. That is what Shakespeare says, puts into his mouth. He actually said in Greek, I've forgotten the phrase, you too, my son, in Greek. He spoke in Greek, which is interesting, because when he was stabbed in the back or wherever he was stabbed, the first thing that came out of his mouth was Greek. So yes, on one level, I agree with you 100% that there was a derivative culture, but it's a strange Rashi. What does it mean that someone else wrote all their books? We will see that it's a strange Rashi because it's a censored Rashi. And the original Rashi doesn't say that at all. It says something else quite different. And we'll see what the church took out and why they took it out. Now, next page. Page 2. Let's turn to the ninth of Tevet. Put all of this in your mind and we'll turn to the ninth of Tevet. The rest of the shir, to some degree, to a significant degree, is based on an amazing shir that I heard many years ago from Rav Shneur Lyman. Rav Shneur Lyman, around 30 years ago, gave a shir on this topic. You can find it on YU Torah, and I've expanded on it in different ways, but his Torah here is very remarkable. He's a top-level academic, obviously been around for decades and decades and researched this topic. Let's have a look together. Number 5. So this is a quote from the Torah. The Torah, living in the 14th century, he quotes here something called Megillat Tanit. Now, it's not the same Megillat Tanit that we just talked about. This Megillat Tanit, which sometimes they call Megillat Tanit Batra, the later Megillat Tanit, is indeed a list of fasts, not feasts, but fasts. And we first find it recorded in the Bahag in the 7th, 8th century in Babylon. It may be older than that. It may go back to the Yerushalayim and the Eretz Yisrael traditions, but they had a set of fasts on which you had to fast. So have a look here, number 5. Kasav Bahag. So the Torah quotes these in Halacha, writes the Bahag as follows, the Baal Halacha's Kedonis. Elu hayamim shemita'anim bahem min ha-Torah. These are the days on which the Torah requires you to fast. Now, that's a strange way to begin it, because the Torah only requires you to fast on one day, which is Yom Kippur. Beit Yosef says here, Afal gav de mitakanat chachamim heim, even though they're from the rabbis, karu lehu min haTorah, we call them here min haTorah, loima, as if to say to you, sheyesh lihizar bahem kamoi b'shel Torah. You have to be careful with these fasts, just like you're careful with keeping a real Torah mitzvah. Which is very strange, because later on the Beis Yosef is going to say, I've never heard of anybody keeping these fasts. Even though the tradition is that they have to be kept with the same level of alacrity as Shel Torah. Others disagree. Later on, the Reshit Chochma says, no, what are you talking about? People do keep these fasts. But here, let's start this list. This is a long, long list. And it appears also in the Shulchan Aruch. We'll see soon. Number 5. So let's carry second line of number 5. When you fast on these special days, you don't drink from the morning till the evening. Meaning it's not from the night before, it's just the day of the fast. Fine. Echad ben Nisan, Mesu ben Aaron, almost all of these days of fast days are days of yortzeits. Famous yortzeits on which great Jewish personalities died. On the first of Nisan, you have to fast because the sons of Aaron died. Well, that's very interesting because you're not meant to fast on Rosh Chodesh. But apparently it says Rosh Chodesh. Beyud, but on the 10th of Nisan, Mesa Miriam. Oh, Miriam's yortzeit. It's interesting. The yortzeit that everybody, not everybody, but many people get very excited about, a few yortzeits, is the yortzeit of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, you know, Lag BaOmer, which is not actually the yortzeit of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. It's Yom Hilula Shel Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rav Yaakov Hillel, who knows what he's talking about on these things, talks about this and says it means the wedding of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, which is a different concept. Okay, not getting into now. It's not his physical wedding, it's a spiritual idea. And a lot of people these days have got very into Rachel Imenu, going to the kever of Rachel Imenu in Mar Cheshvan. And I think it's great. It's a great thing to daven at Kvarim if you know what you're davening for and you're not davening to the people who have died, etc. But it's actually interesting because Rashi, if you look at Rashi, when Rachel dies, he makes very clear from Rashi that she died in the springtime. So exactly where the tradition is that Rachel died in Cheshvan is a different question. But these fasts, everybody seems to have forgotten about. So we've had Bnei Aaron, we've had Miriam. B'chav ched b'kislev, and I've skipped a lot here. It goes all the way through Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av Elul, etc. Let's skip to Kislev. On the 28th of Kislev, Sarif Yoyakim es Megillah asher kasav Baruch mipi Yirmiyah. That's the day traditionally when Yoyakim the king threw onto the fire the Eicha, the Megillah of Eicha that Baruch Ben Neri had written from dictation from Yirmiyahu, and that's on the 28th of Kislev. Does anyone here fast on the 28th of Kislev? It's the middle of Hanukkah. You're not allowed to fast. Interesting. And then he gets into what I'm interested in. Bechet b'Tevet, on the 8th of Tevet, coming up next week on Wednesday. Okay? Hayamase de Talmai HaMelech. That is what happened with Talmai HaMelech. That was the translation of the Torah into Greek, which we will talk about next week on Chet Tevet. Okay? Be'ezrat Hashem. And then you have Betet Bo on the 9th of Tevet. Lo katvu rabotenu al mahu. The rabbis did not write what that was for. Is it a secret? Like, why? I mean, I have to fast. I meant to fast. But they never said why. I meant to fast. And the Yud Bo, and on the 10th of Tevet, we know this well. Samach melech Bavel al Yerushalayim lehachriva. The king of Babylonia came to the walls of Yerushalayim to besiege the walls. Okay, that week, people are going to be fasting on Friday. But I don't think anyone's going to be fasting on Wednesday and Thursday next week, on the 8th and the 9th. In the future, God is going to make these days into feasting days, and brings the pasuk, etc. Beautiful. That's in the Torah. The Bet Yosef on the Torah, number 6, of course, Rabbi Yosef Karo, Avalot Ra'iti Mi'olam. I have never in my life seen Velosh Shamati, and I've never even heard of Misha Nagulit Anot Bahem, of anyone fasting on these days. Ube'emet Sheyesh Litzmoa Al Misha Tiknam. And I think it's very strange. Where did this even come from? This ancient list of fast days. Heich Tikin Ksasam Lehita Anois Barosh Chodesh. How could you fast on Rosh Chodesh? Who's going to be? How can that be? It seems to go against the halacha. But nevertheless, this list of Megillat Tanit Batra, it survived. And it survived not just into the Torah, but into the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, even though he says, I never heard of anybody who did these or fasted on them, he records them. Look at number 7. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But he says, in Tav Kuf Pei, and you can look it up in Orach Chaim in 580. Elu Hayamim She'uru Behem Saris La'avoyseinu. These are the days when terrible things happened to our ancestors. V'ra'ui lehitanot behem. You see what he's changed it to? Ra'ui lehitanot behem. It's okay if you fast on them. It makes sense to fast on them. He's not saying it's an obligation. Even though some of them are Rosh Chodesh, nevertheless you have to fast on them, or you can fast on them. It's fitting to fast on them. It's good not to fast the whole day in Rosh Chodesh, says the Ramon. Fine. Now, skipping to the 8th of Tevet. B'shmona b'Tevet, nichtavu ha-Torah Yevanis. On the 8th of Tevet, the Torah was translated into Greek, b'yamei Talmai HaMelech, in the days of Ptolemy, v'haya choshech ba'olam shlosha yamim. And there were 3 days of darkness in the world. Again, light, dark, Hanukkah, Jews, Greeks. The Greeks make darkness, Jews make light. We'll talk about that next week as well. And of course, 3 days of darkness. Where does 3 days of darkness come from? Choshech and Makkah, that was a 3-day Makkah. Choshech comes in 3-day increments. Ubetetbo, and on the 10th, he doesn't say the rabbis never wrote, but he says, Loi noida, we don't know, Eze he had Sara She'irubo. We don't know exactly what happened on that date. That's interesting, because that's not what the Torah wrote. The Torah wrote that the rabbis chose not to write what happened on that date. Why didn't they write it? Maybe they did know. Maybe they didn't want you to know, or me to know. But the Shulchan Aruch says, I don't know about you. He says, but I don't know. I don't know what happened on that date, but it's there. I'm going to bring it in halacha, which is very interesting. I like a dusty corner of the Shulchan Aruch that most people don't get to. So, of course, once you turn around in the Shulchan Aruch and write, we don't know what happened, who died, because someone must have died, right? All of these are lists of people, almost all of them are lists of yahrzeits. Who died on that date? So if you lay down the gauntlet for all future commentators to come along and say, yeah, well, you don't know, but I know, and this is who died on that date. So let's look at some suggestions. So look at number 8. So this, of course, is before the Shulchan Aruch. This is the Ravid, the first Ravid, Rav Avraham ibn Da'ud, who was living in Spain in the 1100s. Look at what he writes in number 8. Va'amad al kano Rav Yosef Halevi. So who came after Shmuel HaNagid? Shmuel HaNagid was the prime minister of Spain during the golden age of Muslim Spain, where the Jews were basically running the country. Shmuel HaNagid was aristocracy. Everybody loved Shmuel HaNagid. Yosef Hanagid, his son, ruled after him, but he wasn't as well loved. Shehayu ba'aviv, 1 second. Umikol midos tova shehayu ba'aviv, all the good things that his father had, lo chasar, he didn't lack any of them, ela achad. There was one thing he didn't do as well as his father. This, again, we're talking about medieval Spain. Shaloi haya and vanasai. He didn't have the same anava. He didn't have the same humility, ka'aviv, like his father. Mipnesha gadal ba'oyshe, because he grew up in the palace. He grew up with great riches, unlike his father, who, you know, rags to riches was his father. The loy nasa oil bin urav, and he didn't have to struggle as a young man. And therefore, he grew up with, in the lap of luxury. Vegava liboy, and he became arrogant, says the Ravid about him. Adla hashchit, until he went off. The yikno bo sarnei plishtim, and the lords of the plishtim were jealous of him. Now, there were no plishtim around, I can assure you, in Spain. He means the Muslim political echelon became very jealous of Yosef Hanagid. Ad shenerag, until they assassinated him, and this is historically true, and he was living just 100 years later. They assassinated him in 1065, okay? Ad shenerag, but Yom Shabbos Tisha B'Tevis, on the 9th of Tevis, Shnat, Dalad Taf Taf Chaf Vav. He was assassinated on 1065. Ah, so what's this got to do with anything? How do we know he was assassinated on the 9th of Tevet? Ubi Yemei Rabbi Seinuzel, and from earlier, from the time of the rabbis, Hakamonim, we saw this was from the Bahagan from earlier, Shekasfu Megillas Tanis, when they wrote this list of fasts, for Gazru Tanis, for Tes Tevis, they said we have to fast on the 9th of Tevis, for Lo Yadu Almahu, and they didn't tell us why. It was because they prophesied. They prophesied in advance that that he was going to be assassinated on the 10th of Tevis. Umikan Yadanu Shekivnu Baruach HaKodesh LiYomzeh. They had Ruach HaKodesh. They knew already hundreds of years earlier that the 9th of Tevet was going to be the assassination of Yosef Hanagid. That's interesting. I would have thought that Yosef Hanagid probably wouldn't have wanted to know that beforehand. But he says that's what originally happened. Interesting. Are you convinced by that? Is that compelling? You don't think so. I've got some shakes of the head here. But he's trying to work out what could it possibly be. And it could well be that Yosef Hanagid was indeed killed on the 9th of Tevis. That happens to be how it came. And he says, well, this is a yod site that I think they may have been talking about. Okay, that's one suggestion. Fine. Number 9. Another suggestion. Queen Esther. Number 9. V'tilakach Esther al ha-melech Achashverosh. Esther was taken to the king Achashverosh, el beit malchusoi b'chodesh asiri hu chodesh Tevet. Esther was taken in the month of Tevet. She was captured, she was kidnapped by the king, b'shnat sheva l'malchusoi, in the 7th year of his king. Now, why do I care? This does not figure anywhere else in the book of the Megillah. There's no later relevance or reference to this idea that she was captured in Tevet. Comes along the Ramah. The Ramah wrote a commentary on Megillat Esther. He actually wrote it when he was, they had to leave Krakow because there was a plague. I think it was an outbreak of the bubonic plague. And they had to leave. And he was living in the countryside. And he wrote to his father, who was, I think, still in Krakow, I always bring you Mishloach Manas. And this year I'm not with you. But I'm going to write you, instead of Mishloach Manas, I'm going to write you a commentary on Megillat Esther. Yeah? Big nachas from his son. Very nice. Okay? So he says like this. Number 10. Nakazah chodesh yotze mikol chadshi hashana. Why does it reference this day more than any other day of the year? Yotze bal halachas gedolis. Because he says, look at the Bahag that we said has this list of fast days. Kasav kol yomi deroy leitzanos. All the days that it's fitting to fast. The kasav, and he writes there, test tevez. The lo kasav al masnim boy. And he doesn't say, al mamitanim boy. Why we fast there? Ki lo kasvu rabosenu tamo. Because the rabbis chose not to write the reason. Ulechen ka'ama she'mach simchat Esther. And that's why Simchat Esther, the feast of Esther, when the king took Esther, Haitza b'chodesh asiri b'chodesh tevis. Meaning, what are we fasting about? We're fasting about the fact that King Achashverosh captured Esther. For him, it was a big simcha. For her, it was a terrible tragedy. She was brought into the palace of the king. And this is why we fast on the 9th day of Tevet, to remember Esther. That's his suggestion. There's a few problems with this. Number one, it doesn't say anywhere in the verse what day of the month she was captured. Okay, we'll see next week that it might not matter which day of the month you hold these fast days. It's the fact that they have to be in the month. We'll see that next week. It doesn't mention anything in the fast. And last, in the book about a fast. And why is this a secret? Why would the rabbis not want to write this down? It's not controversial. We fast because Esther Nebuch was captured on this day. That's his attempt to do it. Okay. The Taz, in the 1600s, says, I don't understand what the problem is. Why are you telling me you don't know what happened on this day? Number 11. Betet bo loy noda. He says, Tema gedoyla. This is astonishing. This is a very astounding question. Number top of page 3. Ha'ita b'slichos, when you get to the 10th of Tevis next Friday, and you're saying slichot in the morning, look at what you're saying. We say in the slichot, shel yud b'tevis, the betet, that we say in those slichos, that on the 9th of Tevis, meis Ezra ha-sofer. Ezra ha-sofer died. So why is there such a secret? Everybody knows what happened on the 9th of Tevis. Ezra ha-sofer died. That's the yod side of Ezra ha-sofer. Okay? Now, okay, fine. But still, why is it a secret? Why is that some mysterious in some way? And also, it's very unlikely to be correct. Why? Because look in number 12. In the original wording of Megillas Tanis of the Bahag, it says, Betet bo lo kasvu rabbeinu al mahu. On the 9th of Tevis, they didn't write why they are fasting and what happened on day. And also, ubo bayom meis Ezra hakov v'nechemiah benichiklia. Ezra died, Nehemiah died, and also something else happened that they didn't want to tell you what it was. So they're not the same thing. It says something happened, I'm not going to tell you what, and also Ezra and Nehemiah died. So it seems like that's not a good option either. Okay, so what happened on this day? Yes?
Why don't we fast in Adar then?
Why do we, don't we? Ah, that's a whole different shir. We fast in Adar, it's really got nothing to do with Esther at all. It's to do with the battle that we fought against them and the day before the battle. It's reminiscent of Har Sinai and Kabbalah Satorah. There's a lot going on. Much later, it was called the Fast of Esther. When the Ethiopians fasted the Fast of Esther, it was in Nisan when Esther fasted. And which is a whole different... How that became known as the Fast of Esther is a good question, which is a different share, but it's a good question. Okay, so we haven't got a good candidate. We've tried Ezra. We've tried... Esther, okay? We've tried also Yosef Hanagid. Let's do something a little bit out of the box. So here is a book called the Sefer Ha'ibur or Rav Avram ben Chia. Rav Avram ben Chia was a mathematician and astronomer living in Muslim Spain. This source is highlighted in the early days of the Wissenschaft des Judentums. What's the Wissenschaft des Judentums? The early 19th century, there were a group of Jewish scholars that most of them came from religious backgrounds, but they turned to a much more scholarly, academic approach to Judaism. They founded a school, Leopold Zuntz, and later Gretz and other people, who really wanted to look academically at Judaism. There's a link, obviously, with Reform as well, but it's not a direct link. So they uncovered this text, but actually they're not the first ones. We'll see. Also referred to earlier as well. But who is this Avraham ben Chia? What does he say, Rav Avraham ben Chia? Now this will you'll find interesting. Number 13. Who was born on the 9th of Tevet? Nolad Hanotsri. It was Yeshu. Jesus was born on the 9th of Tishrei. And if you want to get into a debate as to whether you're allowed to say the word Jesus or not allowed to say the word Jesus, I've given you a link to that in the bottom, and you'll conclude from the share which way we go on that. Okay, fine. Jesus was born on that day. V'hu nolad l'divrehem. According to them, according to the non-Jews, the 9th of Tevis is the day that he was born. B'shnat gimel alafim taf shin samach alaf. And he traces it back to the year. It comes out as the year 1 BCE. 1 BCE, on the 9th of Tevis, Yeshu was born. L'briyas olam be'esrim v'chamisha yom mechodesh December. Or Dekabar. He calls it Dekabar, which is the 10th month. Okay? Now, I'm not getting into why December is called the 10th month, September is the 7th, October is the 8th. But it was all to do with the Roman calendar and January and February being put in later. But he said on the 25th of December, which turned out it was the 9th of Tevet, if you do the maths, he said, and he was an astronomer and a mathematician, if you do the maths, it turns out that the 25th of December was the 9th of Tevet. V'hu Yom Shabbos, and I'll tell you something else, it was a Shabbos. Yom Teisha B'Tevis, and it was the 9th day of Tevis. V'ray haya yom azed l'hoilid b'na rosha, l'hivaleid b'na rosha. And this day was the right day on which such a wicked person could be born. He's not going to be this source is not an interfaith friendly source. Just warning you that now. He had nothing. He was not writing in a Christian milieu. He didn't have to hold back as to what he felt about Christianity. He said that December the 25th was exactly the right day for Yeshu, he calls him the rosha, to be born. Im divrehem emet, if that's even correct. Now let's just stop for a second. First of all, how do you know that the 25th of December was the 9th of Tevet? Well, you're going to put it into on the internet, you can go back and work out. We didn't have a fixed calendar then. Nobody would know which day was which day because the Sanhedrin was still deciding on the first day of the month when the moon appeared and deciding when Rosh Chodesh was and when Rosh Chodesh wasn't. So it's very hard for anyone to say this was definitely the 9th of Tevet. And how do you know that Jesus was born on the 25th of December? Come on, really? And he says, they don't even know this either. Aval ein adam mamin liv divrehem. And I'll tell you something else. No one even believes the 25th of December. No one even, this was in the 12th century he's saying this. No one even thinks that's the right day. Ha'oimrim aledes ha'talui. He calls him the talui, the one that was hanged up, hung up. Okay? He wasn't even born then. Shehem yadu yom shehaya b'chaf b'December. How did you know it was on the 25th of December? Ki adav ha'zeh einu katuv lehem. This is not even written. Ba'avon gilyon. In their writings of avon with an aleph is like abuse. What is avon gilyon? This is a derogatory name for the evangelion. Avon gilyon is the evangelion. What's the evangelion? What does evangelical mean? It means the good news in Greek. What do we call that in English? If you translate good news into Norse Viking, it's gospel. Okay, that's what it is. He says, and he doesn't even say that. He says, you can look in the New Testament. And he doesn't even say anything about the 25th of December. He never says anywhere a date. So how do they know? The Loi B'Kisvei Talmidei HaMachis. It's not even written in the later books of the Talmidim, of the students of this Machis, the one who, he calls Jesus all these kind of names, the one who made everyone angry. Hashem hei ma'amini b'hem, and they believe in those books, but it's not even there. Aval hayom hazeh, shehu chaf hei min ha-December. But this day, which is the 25th of December, hayayom klon, this was a day of disgrace. Maybe he means their celebration, he's just calling it disgrace. Lu'umat ha-kadmonim, this was a pagan festival. Oivdei alilim, for the pagans. V'haya kadmoini kastim, and the earlier Babylonians even. Korimbo molad hashana. This was the day of the nativity, the 25th of December. But not the nativity of Yeshu, but the nativity of the sun. And in fact, if you go back, this is a very interesting discussion. In the pagan literature, the festival of the birth, the rebirth of the sun, is the festival of the 25th of December. They even used to call the rebirth of the sun from the Virgin. And we're not talking about, this is hundreds and hundreds of years before Christianity. They talked about the Virgin sky giving birth to a newborn son, and just translate, you know, change the word you in sun to the word oh, and then you've got Christianity, you know, given to you on a plate. This was a day that they know. It was a moilad. It was a nativity day. Your moilad shashana, because of the calendar. Nothing to do with Yeshu. Others people called it the birth of the sun, not just the birth of the birth of the year. And there was a whole festival, Natalis Sol Invictus, the birth, the rebirth of the unconquered sun that the Romans used to celebrate as a pagan festival, as we were talking about before. This is the day, these are the days on which you notice the days are getting longer again. And the ground is already beginning to kind of turn. The grass is beginning to get a new koach. Let's say mitachat haaretz to start coming up later on. So the daffodils are going to start coming up soon. And the Christians, he says, stole that day. Lemoilad hazman, because that was the day of the nativity of the year of the sun. And then when the Christian disciples came, lahatos es haumos, and wanted to mislead the whole world, and to make them all go wrong, they decided to give cover to this day, because this was a day of they decided was the birth of their savior. Va'amru, and they said, Loi haya oisim ba'kolon. No, this was not a bad day, this was a good day. Galon godel, ela mipnei she'ha'poisel bazman haya ra'ui lehoilid. But they said it was this was the day that Jesus was always going to be born, and that's why there was a pagan festival beforehand. Ve'hechziru hayom ashehaya kolon le'ovdei halilim, and they took a pagan day to be kolon le'ovdei hapsilim, to be a Christian day. Those who worship psilim, statues, of psulim, and people who are pasul. Okay. Why is the 9th of Tevis a day that we fast? What is it the yuletide of? It's not the yuletide of anybody, he says. It's the birth of Jesus. And we fast as Jews on the birth of Jesus because this was a terrible tragedy for the world as Jews, because it was the 25th of December, da 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 da. But then he says it wasn't the 25th of December, and they don't even think it was the 25th of December. And he says, and the whole thing was taken from the pagans anyway. So does he really believe this? That it was the birth of Yeshu? He said it's not even clear at all that this is the case. And this is reflected in other people, but there's a very different view which we're going to see in a minute. I wrote you here in the number 14. This is a commentary on Megillas Tanis from the 1800s. This is not from the Wissenschaft school. This is from the Orthodox writings, number 14. V'shamati b'shem Godel Echad. I heard from a great person, Da'az Noelad Oysa Ha'ish. That ninth of Tevet is the birth of Oto Ha'ish. Who's Oto Ha'ish? That man. That's what he's called. When I was at Oxford, there was a bit of a craze when I was there in the late 80s that the women would knit kippot with the names of the colleges of the boys to give them to the boys. So they would knit, Keble and Brasenose and whatever in Hebrew, to make it a shtick. So there was a guy there in the JSOC who went to Jesus College. So they didn't know what to write on his kippah. So they wrote on his kippah, Oto Ha'ish. I remember this guy sitting, Oto Ha'ish. They had it in his kippah. Fine. So it was the birth of Yeshu. Okay? But he doesn't seem very convinced. Let's now explore something quite out of the box. Number 15. So these are two sources from classic commentaries. The first is from Rav Baruch Frankel Ta'umim, who wrote a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. And the other one is from Rav Aaron Worms, also 19th century Talmudist. But let's look at number 15 and 16. So first of all, Rav Baruch Frankel Ta'umim, he was a very famous Rav. He was the father-in-law of the Sanzer Rebbe. He was the great-grandson of the Megali HaMukos. Look at what he says. Matzati b'ksav yad. I found a manuscript, he says. Setet tevet niftar. Who died? No, it wasn't Yoshka. It wasn't Jesus. It wasn't him. Shimon HaKalpas. It was Shimon HaKalpas. Shehoshia et Yisrael mitzara gedole. He saved the Jewish people from terrible problems. Bizman HaPritzim. In the time of those who were pirates, who broke down the fences. It's interesting. Of the Hellenist period is pirates Chomet Migdalai. He's called that as well. The Nikva Yom Nisasoin, and the day of his death was preserved, Latanis Olam B'Yerushalayim. And they made a Tanis on the day of his death. Now, by the way, if you say it was the day of Jesus' birth, then now you understand why they didn't tell us what that day was, because it would have got them into serious trouble. But who is this Shimon HaKalpas? You ever come across this fellow, Shimon HaKalpas? Probably, unless you heard Rav Lyman Shear, you wouldn't have come across them. So let's see what he says here. Look at number 16. Tanis Tesper Tavis, the ninth of Tavis. B'sefer Zichroinus, in Books of the Chronicles, Ra'iti Alptiras Shimon HaKalpuni. Kalfuni, same guy. Shimon HaKalfuni, that this is the day that he died, his yotzeit, Shehishlim LeYehudim VeHeilimu Mifneihem. That he really fixed Judaism, but then he was hidden away. Is an unknown hero, an unsung hero. This man, Shimon HaKalpus, it was his yotzeit. He was a great savior of the Jewish people, but they had to keep it quiet because the whole thing only works if you keep it under wraps. He was a hidden hero. Uba Megillah Tanit, and that's why he says number 16, in Megillah Tanit, the book of the list of the files, Naka Taloshon, that's why it says, Loi Kasvu Rabbi Seinu Alma, the rabbis never wrote why. Mashmahach, because it's talking about this. They never wrote it because you're not meant to know. It's meant to be a secret. Until now. It's not going to be a secret anymore. Who is Shimon HaKalpas, or Shimon Kalponi? So this is none other than someone called Simon, who became known as Peter, or Shimon Kaifas. Kaifas in Aramaic is from Kippah, which means a rock, okay? A rock in Latin is Petros, as in the word petrified, okay? Simon Peter, who was Simon Peter, before called Simon? He was one of the disciples. He was one of the 12 apostles. Okay, Simon was called Shimon, and he became called Peter. And his name was changed, according to the New Testament, to Peter, because of Petros, and this became what the Christians known as Saint Peter. And where is the Christian tradition for where Saint Peter is buried? In Saint Peter's, in the Vatican, right? Okay, if anyone's ever done a tour of the Vatican, whether you can go in the churches or not is a different chair, probably not, but that's not for now. But in St. Peter's, St. Peter's Basilica, and he was, by Christian tradition, the first pope. He was the first pope, and he says, we've got news for you. The first pope was really Jewish, and he was really frum, and he was really an authentic Jewish person who actually masqueraded as a Christian pope in order to save the Jewish people. And it's his yahrzeit on the 9th of Tevis. Okay, so let's see, where does this come from? So I brought you two sources. One is from a collection of Midrashim called Oitzeh Midrashim. Oitzeh Midrashim was put together by a Rav in the early 1900s. His name was Eisenstein. Put together a lot of the lesser-known Midrashim. And the other Midrash I brought you was from a collection called Toldos Yeshu, which is much, much older, but maybe from the same sources as he put these Midrashim together. We'll talk about Toldos Yeshu in a minute. Just look quickly in number 17. I brought it for you in English here. We're not going to read the whole thing. And it was after these events there arose a great strife between the Christians and the Jews. A Christian who would see a Jew, he would kill him. The distress kept increasing for 30 years. And the Christians gathered by thousands and ten thousands and prevented Israel from making the pilgrimage festival. And there was great distress in Israel, like the day that the golden calf was made. Remember that for next week. We'll talk about the golden calf then. And 12 men went out, these are the apostles, and traveled through the 12 kingdoms, and they prophesied false prophecies in the camp, and Israel strayed after them. And they were men of renown, and they strengthened belief in Jesus, and they said they were his emissaries, and many of the children of Israel gathered after them, meaning there were Christians missionizing Jews in early Christianity, and persuading Jews to become Christians. So, hang on, I can't believe the same thing happened the same week. Okay, fine, on my phone. Don't worry about my phone. What happened? And the sages saw this evil thing, and it was very grievous to them. And a man said to his fellow, "Woe to us, for we have sinned. This evil has come about Israel in our days, and we and our fathers have never heard of." And they were distressed, and they sat, and they wept, and they lifted their eyes to heaven, and they said, "Please, God, God of heaven, give us advice what to do. How can we stop?" You know, the Christians were infiltrating Judaism. You couldn't even tell who was a Christian. The early Christians were Jews. They kept kosher. They kept Shabbos. And you might organize a shidduch with one of them for your son or for your daughter, and then you find out they're a hidden Christian, they're a Christian Jew. So how? What are they going to do? "Please, Hashem, help us. For innocent blood has been spilled, etc., etc., because of the stumbling block fact." Next paragraph. "And it was when they finished speaking, an elder of the elders arose, and his name was Shimon Kaifa." This is the same man, Shimon Hakalfus, Shimon Hakalfuni. "And he communicated with a heavenly voice, and he said to them, 'Hear me, my brothers and people, if it's good in your eyes, I will separate these men from the congregation of the children of Israel. They will have no portion or inheritance among Israel, but you must take upon yourself the sin.'" Meaning he said, "I will sort it, but you, the Jewish people, have to promise that you'll get me out of Gehenna. You have to take it." And they all answered and said, "We'll take upon ourselves the sin, but do as you've spoken." So what happened? Shimon Kefa went inside the temple. He wrote, because the temple was still standing. He wrote the great name of Hashem and tore his flesh, and he placed the writing inside it. And he left the temple and he took out the writing and he studied the name of Hashem. He smuggled it out, the real name of Hashem that they heard in the Beis HaMikdash. And he went to the Christian metropolis and he cried out in a loud voice and said, "All who believe in Jesus, come to me, for I am his emissary. I'm one of the apostles," he said. And they said to him, "Give us a sign and a miracle." And he said, "What sign do you request from me?" And they said, "Perform for us the same miracles that Jesus performed in his lifetime." And Simon Kepha said, "Bring me a leper." And they brought him one. He placed his hand on him, and behold, he was healed. And they said, and he said, "Bring me a corpse." And they brought one to him, and he placed his hand on him, and he came to life and stood on his feet. And those men saw and fell on their faces to the ground, and they said, "Truly you are an emissary of Jesus." And he did this thus in his lifetime. And he said to them, "I am an emissary of Jesus." Last paragraph. "And this is what he commanded me to go, and he commanded me to go to you. Swear to me that you will do everything I command you." And they said, "Yeah, we'll do it." And Shimon Kefa said to them, "Know that Jesus actually hated Israel and their Torah, as Isaiah prophesied. And further, know he doesn't want Israel, as Hosea prophesied, for you're not my people. And even though he has the power to uproot them from the world, in any case, he doesn't want to destroy them entirely." Meaning the Jews will continue. This is classic Christian theology. The Jews continue to exist in order to show how disgraced they are that they rejected the Christian Messiah. "Rather, he wants to leave them in order that his hanging and his stoning will be remembered for all generations, and most of the great afflictions he suffered," etc. Over the page. "And now," he says, "this is what Jesus wants me to tell you. He warns you and commands you not to do any more evil to any Jew. Leave the Jews alone," meaning we need the Jews. "Don't kill them anymore. And if a Jew says to a Christian, 'Come with me a mile,' he'll say, 'Go with him 2 miles.' And if a Jew strikes him on his left cheek, he'll turn with him the right cheek." You've heard that before, right? "So that he will receive his reward in this world," etc. "And if you do this, you'll merit to dwell with him in his portion. And behold, he commands you not to celebrate the festival of Matzahs. Rather, celebrate the day of his death, what we call Easter. And instead of Shavuot, celebrate 40 days from when he was stoned and ascended to heaven, Pentecost. And instead of Sukkot, celebrate his birthday. And on the 8th day of his birth, celebrate the day on which he was circumcised." Meaning, this guy, Shimon, this tzaddik, Shimon, who is posing as an apostle, says to the Christians, "Stop keeping halacha. Stop keeping mitzvahs. We don't want you to keep. I've been told to stop you keeping mitzvahs. You have to, from now on, reject mitzvahs." And they all answered him, we will do everything you've spoken, if only you'll stay with us. And he says, I will dwell with you, and I accept the following, I will not eat any food except for dry bread, measured water, and you must build me a tower in a city, and I will dwell in it until the day of my death. That's St. Peter's Basilica. And they said to him, as you speak, so we shall do. And he built a tower for him, and he dwelled in his tower as a home. And they provided his daily ration, bread and water, until the day of his death. And what did he do there in this tower? He composed many liturgical poems, and he sent them through all the borders of Israel, so he would serve as a memorial for all generations. And all the liturgical poems he composed, he sent to his rabbis. He smuggled out these piyutim that he composed, and he sent them to the rabbis to show them that he was still an underground converso. He was a secret Jew. He was a hidden Jew. And afterwards they built on it a magnificent building, and this tower still stands in Rome, and they call it Peter, which is the name stone, because he dwelled there, etc. Interesting. This man, he died on the 9th of Tevis, or it doesn't say here explicitly he died on the 9th of Tevis. We'll see that in a minute. And he was a secret underground Jew, the first pope. So if anyone says, has there ever been a Jewish pope? According to this Midrash, there has. And this appears in different forms in Toldos Yeshu. What's Toldos Yeshu? Toldos Yeshu was a book which circulated in the Middle Ages. It's actually older than the Middle Ages. They trace it back all the way to the Gaonic period, and maybe even earlier. So it's very, very old as many of the other Midrashim. And it's a very negative account of Jesus. Of all things, how he was born, how he lived, how he died. And of course, this book was banned by Christians for most of history, because if Jews were found with this book, Toldos Yeshu, this was they considered a libel against Christianity. There is even a theory that it was based on an early gospel that was never allowed into the canon, a Jewish gospel. It's actually very interesting academia on this, but not for now. The only people who really were allowed to have Toldos Yeshu, ironically, were Christians. And they were the ones who printed it originally. So I brought you a few things here. It's mostly the same story. If you look at the end, it says, the last paragraph, after some days he wrote poetry in the tower, Kroivos, Yotsros, Zultos, by his name, as did Eliezer ben Kalir. You've heard of HaKalir? Eliezer HaKalir, one of the greatest authors of Piyutim. So now you know, he says, according to this, it was Eliezer HaKalir and also Shimon Kalpus. And he sent and gathered the elders of Israel and gave them everything, and he sent these all around the world, and he taught them to all of the cantors all around Israel. All of the chazonim learned the piyutim and the songs in the davening of Shimon Kalpus. They learned these songs everywhere they went. Interesting. So it says in Toldos Yeshu. Now, do we trust Toldos Yeshu? Is it authoritative? How does it work? Good question. You can look at that elsewhere. But there are a lot of different things that come out of Toldos Yeshu. A lot of the things that the folklore that you know all about the birth, Yoshki Pandera and all this you'll be familiar with, all come straight out of Toldos Yeshu. Now, there was a 1705 version of Toldos Yeshu which was printed by a Christian. And translated into Latin. You can go online, you can get it. I gave you a link for it. You can get it in Latin if you like reading in Latin. There are people who read in Latin. I was recruiting just now for my Midrashah. I bumped into I was introduced to a young woman in Manhattan, fluent in Latin and ancient Greek. You know, it could come in handy one day. So he says like this, number 19. V'yamot Shimon HaKalponi, this is from Toldos Yeshu, number 19, and Shimon Kalponi died, v'yitablu b'nei Yisrael et Shimon, and the Jewish people mourned for him, v'kavu yom misasoi l'hitanois b'chol shana v'shana, and they fixed the day to mourn for him in every single year, on v'hutet yomim b'yirach Tevis, on the 9th of Tevis. So the 9th of Tevis actually originally appears in Toldos Yeshu, which is very, very old as the Bahag. So now maybe you know why we don't know who died on this day. We do know who died, but we don't want to let the cat out of the bag. Look in number 20. This is in English, rather, Lyman translated this. Simon resided in the Tower of Rome, where he ordained and codified the Christian laws and customs, as he was commanded to do by the King of Judea and the sages. He transformed the alphabet, giving the letters new names, thereby intimating to those in on the secret that what he ordained was false. This was the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E. Interesting, he says that Latin, and again, this I don't know if you'll necessarily find historically this is exactly where Latin comes from, but he said Latin, the letters that we know were formed by Shimon, says Toldos Yeshu, by Shimon HaKalponi. By the way, there's even a tradition that some of them are plays on words. And you might not believe this, but it's true. Some of the Rishonim bring down L, M, N. is the words El, God, A, M, is a mother, Ain, a God who had no mother. El, M, Ain. Interesting. So meaning he gets the whole thing here. A, B, C, D, E, F. And he also composed for them books of lies, which he called the Avonkilion. But they thought he said the Evangelium. And Simon also authored books in the name of Jesus' disciple, including John. Oh, now John's in on it as well. Okay? Claiming that Jesus has provided with him all the material. Wow. This is becoming quite a widespread conspiracy. It's not Simon does, it's John as well that's in on this too. Interesting. Does this have any other traditional Jewish source? Yes. Sefer Hasidim. Sefer Hasidim in number 21. This is a very classic source, written by Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid in the 12th, 13th century. It says, Yehudi Shehemir, a Jew that goes off and becomes a Christian. Mechanin lo shem, we give him a nickname. Shneemar, kamoim yuasehem, he quotes from Hallel, we read this morning. Kamoim yesh lechanos behem, we have to name them negative names like we name those gods negative names. Kagoim, he gives you some examples. Im shemoi Avraham, if this Jew was called Avraham and he becomes a Christian. Yikro, we should call him Ephraim. Interesting. I know actually lots of kosher Yosha Jews called Ephraim. I wonder if they know the Sefer Hasidim or if there's any other origin of the name. The Chen Kayotzi was ever. Afilu Tzaddik, even if the non-Jew was actually a hidden Tzaddik. A Tzaddik that became a Christian. Is there such a thing? The Haim Toimach Rav, and other people then go after him, Kagoin Shimon Kepha. He refers to him exactly in the Sefer Hasidim like this hidden tzaddik Shimon. She'omrim, they call him Peter. What do they call him in Hebrew? Peter Chamor. Peter the donkey. Because of Peter Chamor. Peter Chamor as in the redemption of the donkey, the firstborn donkey. Yeah. So now you know why Peter is called Peter Chamor, because it's the nickname, even though he says he was a tzaddik. Now, remember Rashi right at the very beginning. It says that Rome is a disgrace because they have no writing and they have no language. They have no script and they have no... And we saw a strange Rashi. All their books were written by other people. That Rashi that we have in our Gemara and Avodah Zarah is a censored Rashi. The original Rashi, and you can find it now easily online, reads as follows. Number 22. Ksav Lashon, Acherim Tiknu Lahem Kol Sifrei Ta'uta. Other people wrote the books that cause other people to go off. And here's what they are. Yochanan, the book of John. Paulus, the book of Paul. Petrus, the book of Peter. The Haim Yehudim Hayu, and these were all Jews. And these books were all forged by these Jews in on the conspiracy. And what does Lashon mean? They have no Lashon. Hu Grammatica. Grammatica is the word that Rashi uses for Latin. Okay? Vuhu HaLashon Shemedabrim Bo Galachim. And this is the language that the priests use. The Haim Shanu, they changed it. Veninku HaLashon Ve'asu Lehem Hevel. They made nonsense of it. L'chashmu V'nei Atzman. To think that they themselves wrote it. L'sal Kamei Yisrael. To distance the Jews from the Christians. It was all to try and get the Christians to stay away from the Jews. V'lasha Kafru. And they didn't do anything wrong here. It was actually a good thing they did. Ki L'tovasan Shal Yisrael Niskavnu. They were doing it in order to help the Jews. Elamitnesha Rao Yisrael Batsar, they showed the Jews in such terrible problems because of early Christianity, Ubadoichet, Mitre Mese Yeshu, because of the deceptions of Yeshu, Asu Atzman Keilu Haim Imoi. They made out that they were with him. The Kadeshus and one of their saints. Vitsivu Alei Makol, but they made the whole thing up. Kamafurish Besefer Tlias Yeshu, and he calls it not told us Yeshu, but Tlias Yeshu, the hanging of Jesus. Rashi says, he quotes explicitly, this is the man that we're talking about. He's there in Rashi. Okay, good. Where does this affect us today, apart from knowing why you might fast on the 9th of Tevet, if you're planning to fast on the 9th of Tevet? Now at least you know at least what it might be all about. So there's two things. One of them is Nitelnacht, which I just mentioned. It's really a whole shit in and of itself. Nitelnacht. So if you look on page 7, I brought you some of the traditions on Nitelnacht, that they don't learn Torah. Which night is Nitelnacht? So you should just know that there were two traditions in the early church as to when Yeshu was born. One was the 25th of December, and one was the 6th of January. And that's got nothing to do with the Gregorian and the Julian calendar. That was 1,000 years before Pope Gregory changed the calendar to the Gregorian calendar. So there were Christians that celebrated the birth of Yeshu on the 6th of December. And therefore, the Hasidim bring down, if you live in a country where Nitl Nachta the 6th of December, then you have to not learn Torah on the 6th of December. And I brought you some of them in Hagim. Why did they not learn Torah? So as they not to give a schut to Yeshu, who was born on that day. Why did they learn Torah only after midnight? So there's a physical issue here as well, that the Jews used to be attacked and killed on the night of Christmas. People used to go out, they used to get drunk, they used to attack Jews, they used to attack the women. It was a very dangerous night for a Jew to be out. By midnight, they all managed to roll into church to hear midnight mass. So at midnight, it was safe for the Jews to come out to learn Torah. So that's one of the reasons why they learned Torah at midnight. And I brought you other things brought down as well. The Mitnagdim never accepted Nitl Nacht, and the Sfaradim didn't even know, you know, anything about it. They had nothing to do with it. The custom on Nitl Nacht was to play chess with Chabad. Not just stam chess, but to deepen your analytical skills, etc. There were other people who had yeshivas who had a minhag to tear all the bathroom toilet paper for the whole year. They would tear it on Nitl Nacht. That's, you know, what Gateshead did that. You heard it here. Gateshead did that. What's more astounding, and I brought you the last page. Just look very briefly in the last minute. The Machzor Vitri. The Machzor Vitri, Rav Simcha Vitri, student of Rashi, brings down that we said that this man, this hidden tzaddik, this Jew who said he was the first pope, he composed piyutim, he composed special liturgy for the Jewish Siddur. There is a view, says the Machzor Vitri, that he composed the poem Nishmat Kol Chai. Nishmat Kol Chai. Peter, Simon Peter. Because in Nishmat Kol Chai is a backwards acrostic of Shin, Mem, Ayin, Vav, and Nun. Now, there were those that said it was Shimon. It was a different Shimon. It was Shimon ben Shetach. But there were those that said no. And he brings this down, the Machzor Vitri. There were those who said that it's actually Shimon HaKalpi. He composed Nishmat, but he doesn't like that at all. He says, V'chas v'sholem sheloi tiyeh zois b'Yisrael. God forbid you say the Nishmat that we say on Shabbos morning was composed by the first pope. If anyone who says this, he has to bring a korban for saying such a thing, and not just a korban, but a big fat one too. You can't say that. However, there are those that said that. The Shadal talks about it. Rav Shimon David Lutzato, he says it was a mistake. He wasn't him ever and didn't do that. But I found you, and here for the yekas amongst you, you'll appreciate this. In the footnotes in the Rodelheim Siddur, okay, that the yekas still use, to daven from in number 26, he brings down on the Nishmat prayer. If you look there in the, I brought it to you, you can read it to you later. He says some say it was Shimon ben Shetach that wrote it, and some people say it was Shimon HaKalponi, the first Jewish pope, Peter himself, that wrote Nishmat Kol Chai. Now, it's a very interesting debate, very interesting analysis, and maybe brings to light this very unusual Jewish figure. Again, you can decide, research it yourself, decide if you agree with it, but it pops up in many of the traditional sources that we've seen today, and now you maybe have a bit of an insight into what might have happened on the 9th of Tevet. Next week, the writing of the translation of the Torah into Greek and the 10th of Tevet, we'll see how that works. Okay.